Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Adoption Hacks. I'm your host, Candace Laycock. Today on the show, we have Allison Storm, who adopted a little girl from Burundi. She's going to talk with us about adopting debt-free. That was very important to her family. I know that's important to a lot of families out there, that they don't take out a loan and be able to do it completely debt-free. Fundraising is the number one thing I get asked about. So many questions, so many times people see that final number and it's intimidating and overwhelming. They don't know where to start. There's a lot of facets to fundraising, including doing it ethically, how to stay organized, grants, so many different aspects. But today we're going to focus just on some fundraising ideas. Allison has a ton of creative fundraising ideas and some side hustles that they did to get additional funding. So today's episode is going to focus on that. You're going to, I think, just hearing these ideas from Allison, it might even spark some creative ideas for you of things that you're good at or skilled at that you can use to fundraise. So please enjoy this episode and remember to give us a 5-star review on iTunes and write a quick little review if you have a chance. Thanks so much, everybody. I have the joy today of interviewing Allison Storm, who is somebody that I've been following all of my adoption journey. When we were looking at different countries and considering international adoption, we were looking at Burundi adoption, and I had just happened to find Allison's page and followed her story, and she just is such a, you'll see and you'll hear in just a minute, but she's just somebody full of joy, full of life, and just really great to hear from. So I've kept following her all this time, and it's just been really cool to see her family come together. So it's a great pleasure to have you on, Allison. Welcome.
Thank you, Candace. And how crazy is it that your little boy's been home for 3 years, you were saying, and my little girl's only been home 6 months.
I know.
You started this after. That's so crazy.
I know. It really is crazy. You have had such a wild journey, and I can't wait to hear about that. And we are going to hear about that. We're going to touch on the Burundi adoption, but we're also going to touch on something that is near and dear to your heart, which is fundraising. So we'll get into that in a little bit. But first, can you just tell us a little bit about you and your family?
Yeah. So I am, I've spent my whole adult life in media, and I started as a television reporter and working as a magazine writer and in Christian radio. And then most recently, I have launched the unofficial Chick-fil-A podcast. It's called My Pleasure. And it's been super fun just to learn the world of podcasting. And I have a great co-host named Jim, and we are Chick-fil-A fanatics. So we thought, why not start a podcast about that? And it's been just so fun to meet other people who love Chick-fil-A, but also just to chat about life. We chat about, it's chat, laughs, and chicken. So
I love
that. And then, of course, yeah, it's been super fun. And then, of course, I've been married for 13 years to my wonderful husband, Tim, and we have 2 children, Sammy, who is 7, and Faniella is our newest addition, and she is 4.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing those. And yes, please go download the My Pleasure, the unofficial Chick-fil-A podcast. It is so, especially like in these times, it's just nice to listen to it. It's fun. It's interesting. You guys, I listened yesterday to the secret menu episode. So you've got good info, and it's just enjoyable to hear you guys talk about everything.
Thank you. Yeah, we launched on March 14th, which would have been Truett Cathy, the founder's 99th birthday. And that was also like the start of COVID. So it was kind of a weird timing to be like, let's talk about Chick-fil-A. But you know, we've navigated those waters. We haven't ignored it, but we also want to give people a place to just kind of, you know, unwind a little bit and have fun and laugh.
Yeah, for sure. And thankfully that drive-thru has been open all the whole time.
I know. Amen.
Okay. So how did you guys end up wanting to adopt?
So I knew that I was supposed to adopt from a very young age. It my calling really fell on me when I was in probably middle school. I was serving at our church's vacation Bible school one summer, and in our classroom of these little kids, we had a girl who was adopted from China. And when you grow up in a, mid-sized town in Iowa, you don't in the 80s, you didn't see a lot of faces that looked any different. So that she really stuck out to me, and I had so many questions about her story and how she got there, and my pastor adopted her. And that was just really struck a chord with me, and I just knew that someday I was supposed to do that.
That's cool. And then how did you guys end up choosing Burundi to go through?
Yeah, so my husband and I, earlier in our marriage, we were able to go to Liberia, West Africa, with an organization called Water of Life. It's now called Set Free. And Set Free drills wells in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and India. And I'm currently on the board with them. I have been for many years, and it's just an organization that I'm really passionate about. But that was my first real mission trip, was getting to go to Liberia and help drill some wells and meet people there. And doing that and having that experience with my husband really helped us realize that we had a passion for Africa specifically. So we started researching countries that were had open adoptions in Africa. And at the time, some countries had closed. Burundi had just opened, and it was called a pilot program. And I'm kind of the personality where I'm like, ooh, pilot program. I can start something new. I can be, one of the first people to do it. Well, in case you don't know, pilot program actually means like really slow. So just a warning to all of you that are starting your research, pilot program equals haven't worked out all the kinks. Don't really have a process in place, learning as we go, kind of a
You
thing.
are the
So,
guinea pig.
exactly. That's what it felt like. But once we signed on the dotted line, there was no changing our minds. So, at our, we went through All God's Children, and, at certain times when you've been waiting a year and 2 years, they say, do you want to look at another country? And a lot of people do change, and they feel like, well, maybe that's what it's meant to be. But for us, we just felt like our child was in Burundi, and we just needed to stay the course.
Yeah, that's really cool. And what was your total wait time from when you signed up to when you brought her home?
I should know this because it's like, but I also am like really bad at math. So we announced in about March of 20, it would have been March 2016. Because the crazy thing is, looking back at the dates and everything, that would have been almost the exact same time that our daughter arrived at her shelter. So it was within a couple of weeks that we announced we're adopting, and that she, according to the paperwork, which sometimes can be inaccurate, but she was at the shelter. So she waited at that shelter just as long as we did.
That's crazy. I mean, it's kind of like it's too bad you all had to wait that long, but it is kind of it makes you be able to relate to each other in a really unique way that you waited for each other together.
I will also say for my son, who ended up having to wait half his life because he was 3 and a half when we announced, and he's 7 when she finally got home. He really doesn't remember a time where we weren't talking about his brother. We always called brother sister because we didn't know, or praying for his brother sister every single night. And also, I think that really formed this love for his sibling in his heart over all those years, and that connection has really just flourished since she's been home.
Oh, that's really great to hear. What was that process like? Can you walk us through just some of that, of your story and the weight and what it was like over there and all that stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we first signed up, we were told that it would be about 12 to 18 months. So for us, we thought, oh, that's not long. Like, that should be great. But as time went on, it became clear that it wasn't going to be happening that quickly. So the ideal scenario for Burundi is they have a matching committee, and the goal is to have that matching committee meet monthly. But what is happening right now and happened throughout our process is they really only met once or twice a year.
Wow.
Now, and what I had to keep reminding myself over and over is that Burundi is dealing with a severe lack of any resources. Mm-hmm. And the people that are responsible for connecting the children with families, I mean, that's a huge job. And that's just one tiny part of what they do. And they do it with no electricity a lot of times. Mm-hmm. They do it with one computer in an entire building. So like, you have to think about the hurdles that they're overcoming. It's easy for Americans to get frustrated with, why can't you meet once a month? But when you really think about, you know, what they're dealing with and what they managed to get done, and also the fact that the culture, this is sort of a new concept for them. So there's a lot of education that needs to happen in, you know, why this is good for these children and how it can help these children and give them opportunities and things like that.
Yeah. Are there multiple shelters over the country, or is there just one central place?
Yep. There's I don't know the exact number, but there are shelters all over the country, and our agency has several that have had placements from. The shelter that our little girl was in is right in the capital city of Bujumbura. So, you know, her little world was pretty much 1 acre of land in the capital city, and she didn't really go out of that, you know, property very much. They had a church around the corner that they walked to once a week, and she had a school on property that she could go to. But other than that, that was her little world.
Yeah. It's cool to hear you say that you never wavered on wanting to go through there. That country was just what was on your heart. But what kept you going during that wait and the uncertainty?
I think definitely we knew that it was our calling, and also God provided throughout the whole journey. So being able to see that, we knew that it was going to happen. We knew that He would keep His promise. But that also didn't make the waiting any easier, to be honest. Yeah. Even though, you know what the outcome is going to be, it's agonizing. I mean, there are times where it's just, you know, the hardest thing that you've ever had to walk through, but you just have to keep going and know that and believe that it's going to happen.
Yeah, for sure. There's no secret that makes waiting easier.
Nope. And in fact, like, you know, now that she's home and there's still all these families in our agency that are waiting and have spent years waiting, I struggle with, like, what do I say to them? Because one thing I do not want to say is, like, you know, everything happens for a reason, or, you know, it's all in God's time. Honestly, if I had heard that one more time, I might have gone insane. I mean, you know, they're all true, but when you've heard them so many times for so many years, it just makes you want to throw up a little bit in your mouth. It's like, please, can we say something else?
I know, but
but the truth is, there's nothing you can say. There's really nothing. You know what? The most comforting thing that was said to me was just last year. My brother-in-law said, "The road ahead is much shorter than the road behind." Okay. And that visual was, like, so powerful to me. And knowing like, yes, we have come so far and we just have to make it a little bit further and we can do it. That meant a lot to me.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good. I'm going to remember that to share with others, because it is hard to know. You want to connect with those who are there and comfort those, but having been there, you know that, you know, what can I say? But that's really good. Mm-hmm. That's really good. Yeah. Were there other people in your program or just other Burundi families that you did connect with when you were in the process?
Yes. So we've been able to connect with several that have children that are at the shelter currently and still waiting for them to come home, and some that have already come home. So like a couple of really cool moments. One of the things I did after we got our match, which was roughly 9 months before she actually got home, is that I reached out to different families and I said, here's our little girl. Do you have any pictures of her from when you were there? Because my thought was, I want to create a baby book of some sort for her. Mm-hmm. So one of the ladies responded and she said, oh my gosh, is this your little girl? And she sent me a picture. And it's Faniella, she would have been three, and she had this woman's little boy on her lap. And she said, that the day that they went to get their little boy, he was really upset. And my daughter picked him up and was comforting him and, you know, trying to make it better. So I have this awesome picture of the two of them at the shelter. And that's the oldest picture I have of her currently. And about 3 months after she was home, that family, they don't live very far from us. They live about an hour away. They came and visited, and we got to spend a day with them. And we recreated that little photo of her with the little boy on his lap. Of course, he's a lot bigger now, but it was just so cute to have that connection. And I hope we can always keep that connection too.
Yeah.
And then another neat thing that we did, just an idea for other families, is that I had some of her friends from the shelter that had been adopted and were in America. I had them do little videos for her so that she could see a friend who she remembered from the shelter that left and what their life was like now, and that they were happy. And and so I showed these little videos to her in Burundi. And she loved it. She watched them hundreds of times. And then we were able to also FaceTime with them since then. You know, one family lives in Texas and we are able to connect with them pretty regularly. So just I think it's so important to keep those connections as long as the child wants it. And she's gone through phases, I will say. Sometimes she wants to and sometimes she does not. Mm-hmm. But just letting her know that they're there and that she has this connection to her past, I think is really important.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a great idea, Allison. That's really smart. And I think that, instead of just being like, okay, this is your past, closing the door, new chapter mm-hmm. starting, but to be able to flow between those that's great.
Yeah. It's been really cool to see that. And just to keep that conversation open, she loves to tell stories about the shelter. Some of them I don't think are true, but that's okay.
That's a four-year-old.
Yep, exactly. I mean, there's some tall tales about climbing avocado trees and it's cute, and how they all had they all had their own motorized cars. And I was like, don't think that was true, but it's cute.
That's funny. Is it still an active program?
It is active, but I will say that it's, you know, there hasn't been a lot of movement in the last year, which I know is extremely frustrating for the families that are in the process.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
But as far as I know, they are still accepting new families into the process.
Okay. Okay. Good to know. Okay, let's let's switch gears a little bit. And what were some hindrances that you had when you were considering adoption?
So this was huge for me because here I was. I knew I had been called to adopt since I was, you know, a teenager, a tween. but I also had made this very strong commitment to be debt free. And my husband and I, the week of our marriage, we went to a Dave Ramsey live event. And from that moment on, we were committed to being debt free, to getting out of debt and to never going back in it. Mm. And when you're thinking about adopting internationally, you can't not think about a price tag that's, you know, around $30,000. And for us, we just couldn't imagine that time where we would have $30,000 like sitting in an account, not earmarked for anything except for adoption. But I was at the gym and I was listening to a book by Francis Chan. It was actually a marriage book. And there's this quote in the book, and he says, sometimes people are paralyzed by fear of failure. They're so afraid that they might do the wrong thing that they do nothing. We need to learn to err on the side of action because we tend to default to negligence. For example, why not assume you should adopt kids unless you hear a voice telling you not to? That seems more biblical, since God has told us that true religion is to care for the widows and orphans. Hmm. And I can still remember the piece of equipment I was using at the gym when I heard that, because it was one of those life-changing aha moments where I was like, here I am. I know that I'm called to adopt, mm-hmm. and I'm not taking those steps forward. And I'm paralyzed by fear. And I went home and we talked about it. And we said, that's not faith. Faith is stepping out even when you don't have that account with $30,000 in it. So mm-hmm. we said right there, we're like, okay, God, we're just going to start the process. We don't have the money. And we're going to see what happens. We also know that we've committed to not living a life with debt. Mm-hmm. So those two things don't seem to really go together, but we're going to try this and see what happens. And it was the most beautiful experience of my life.
Yeah. So how did you do it? Give us the answers, Allison.
I know. Okay. So it was, well, I just have to say, if that's you, just test God. I know some people might think, oh, that sounds kind of wrong, but no, test him. See what he does. Because if, you know, you're meant to adopt, I fully believe that he will provide. And I don't believe that you will have to go in debt for it. Some people make that choice. Maybe, you know, you don't have that conviction, but if you do, don't let it stop you. So for us, we had a beautiful combination of God just dropping money into our lives, but also working really hard to raise money. So, like, talking about fundraisers, we did some really creative and fun things. One thing that I loved doing was we had an Instagram auction, and people can do auctions in a lot of different ways, but I had local artists and shops and friends, all kinds of things, donate items for this auction. And then I held it over 3 days on Instagram, and people could bid with their comments. And we ended up raising over $3,000 in that one.
Wow.
That was really fun. My mom is a very good seamstress. And so she and I made handmade teepees that kids, you know, can play in, play mm-hmm. teepees. And we sold those for $100 each and ended up raising a few thousand dollars that way too. That was really fun. Mm-hmm. We had a yard sale, of course. And one thing we did to make that even more successful was we asked our community if they had any items to donate for us to sell. So we ended up with, you know, some really good things to sell that we wouldn't have had otherwise. Mm-hmm. A couple of the more bizarre things that we did. one of them was we hid Easter eggs in people's yards. So for a range of, I think, $25 to $50, people could hire us to hide Easter eggs in their yard. And so on a Saturday before Easter one year, my husband and I drove for about 10 hours all around different houses, jumping out, hiding these Easter eggs that we had stuffed. I mean, we had thousands of Easter eggs. And there were some funny moments of like dogs that were seemed unhappy with us, or like we were just wondering if people were going to call the police. But again, we raised a few thousand dollars doing that, and we have just crazy memories.
Yeah.
From the experience.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing we did was we sold Valentine balloon bouquets. We don't know anything about balloons, so I wouldn't really suggest that one. again, there's funny stories of like my husband trying to deliver this balloon bouquet on a windy day, and it was like all tangled, and some of the balloons flew away as he got to the house, and but just funny things like that. People were very gracious, though.
Yeah, that's cool. So, those a lot of very creative ideas.
Yeah, that's the fun thing about it, I think. I have a friend right now who's raising money for adoption. She's selling edible cookie dough. And this stuff is going like crazy. So she's just making it in her kitchen and selling it in these cute little jars. But it's, yeah, she sold a lot of that stuff. So there's no shortage of creative ideas. And as long as you're willing to like put in the work, people want to support you. And I think you'll also walk away with some really fun memories and stories to share with your child about what you did to get them to your home.
Mm-hmm. Did you do any, were you strategic about like the timing of these? And like, did you make sure you placed them like far apart so you could, they weren't, it wasn't too much for people, or how did you do that?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, we never really had more than one going at once. I will say that most of our fundraising happened earlier on in the process. So like year one and year two of waiting. Because by then I thought, well, people are probably wondering like, where's all this money going? How much more money does this girl need? but you know, and you do end up, I think, paying some of those big bulk payments at the beginning. So that's when we needed the money the most. So that's probably when we did the most fundraising. And it was also just a really good distraction too. And for me and my personality, it felt so good to do something, mm-hmm. you know, to physically be able to do something that was helping my child.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. What about, did you apply for grants too?
Yep, applied for a lot of grants. We ended up getting a few of them. We got the Show Hope grant, which was really great. Life Song for Orphans is another one. That one's a matching grant, at least for us it was. And that's a really nice scenario because it also gives people an opportunity to be able to give in a tax-deductible way towards your adoption. Mm-hmm. We also had a GoFundMe page. I think we raised about $5,000 there. You have to be careful with those though, because they will take a cut. So if people are, you know, wanting every single dollar to go to you, you know, something like Life Song for Orphans may be a better option. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the Show Hope grant was a really cool story because at the time, I was working for a Christian radio station, and we interviewed a lot of artists, and they came into our studio. And Stephen Curtis Chapman, who, if you're familiar with Christian music, obviously he's a Christian music superstar, been around forever, and he and his family do so much to help families that are adopting, and they have a shelter as well that they operate and help care for orphans. And they provide a lot of grants through Show Hope, which is their organization. And Stephen was in our studio the exact day that we finished our dossier. Mm-hmm. And I had taken it to the office to use the photocopier to photocopy some of it, and on the day that he was there. And the fact that those collided on the same day, I mean, it's not a coincidence. I think God orchestrated that completely, because that is one of those milestone moments in the adoption process where you have worked so hard to get your paperwork baby together. And it just feels like, okay, this is really happening, you know? And so he was able to pray with me over that paperwork. And I have this great photo of us praying over it. And so that was just a really special memory in the process. And just another one of those moments that I looked back on a lot, just to know that it was going to happen. And that was proof that it was all part of God's plan.
Yeah, that's so cool. How long did it take until you were fully funded?
So we really worked on those fundraisers for, like I said, a year or two. And then something else really cool happened out of this. So my husband and I both took on some side hustles to raise extra money or to make extra money as well. And one of the side hustles that he took on was helping my sister with something called search engine optimization. My sister has an online retail store, very successful bachelorette party supply site, and she needed some help with her search engine optimization, which what that means is it helps you get found on Google. Like when people search bachelorette party supplies, you'll come up at the top. Mm-hmm. So she asked my husband, because she knew we were trying to raise, make more money. And she asked my husband if she could hire him to help her with this. And she said, you know, you could kind of teach yourself how to do it and also help me in the process and I'll pay you for it. And he said, okay. So at the time I was getting up to go to work at 4 a.m. So he would get up when I got up at 4 a.m. and he would work and teach himself search engine optimization. Well, this crazy thing happened through the process. He actually loved it. He started, he really just became an expert in it. He started taking on other clients and through the whole process found a new career that he absolutely loves. He had been working in a family business and this was something he decided to step out and just start. And so he started a business through a adoption side hustle. Yeah. And he is now earning several times more than what he made at that other job. So by the end of the adoption process, our income looked way different than it did at the beginning, which is another just huge blessing out of all of this. So yeah. By the end, we were able to, cash roll a little more of the expenses. The other cool thing that we did was we Airbnb'd our house. So we were able to stay in a friend's condo that wasn't being used. It was my family members and is a small condo, but it didn't matter because it was all part of the ultimate goal of getting our daughter home. So all last summer, we rented out our primary residence. And instead of hiring a cleaning person, we went in, we saved that $100 and we cleaned every time we had to flip the house over to another guest. Mm-hmm. We, got it all ready. I did the marketing, I handled the bookings and all of that. Mm-hmm. And last summer we were able to make over $10,000 just from Airbnb.
Wow.
The house. And that is what we used to pay for the plane tickets to Africa.
Wow. That's amazing.
In fact, even we had a friend in the adoption community that messaged me and was like, I'm coming to your town for an adoption conference. Can I stay in your house? And I was like, well, I wasn't planning on Airbnb it this weekend, but sure, why not? And the total for her came and her friends came to $500, which was the exact amount we needed to redo our fingerprinting. And you know, when you have to redo, I don't know if you had to redo, but when you have to wait a long time, you end up having to redo a lot of this stuff. And all of that comes with a fee of usually several hundred dollars. And that one was perfect timing. So I said to my friend who's here for an adoption conference, you're basically paying for, you know, this updated fingerprinting, which with just the timing of it was really cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. Where did you get these ideas? Did you just?
You know, I'm an Enneagram 7, so ideas are a dime a dozen for me. I just have to figure out which ones are worth pursuing. That's my problem.
That's funny. That's what my husband is too, a seven.
Oh, yeah.
I'm familiar with the
you
lifestyle.
probably get it. Yep.
Finances is such a huge part of adoption. And I would say, of the questions that I get asked, number one is always, oh, how do you do this? Should I do this? And I think that a lot of people just stop there. They just see that number. They don't understand it. They don't know the ideas that you can do, the resources. And so they just can't even get, they can't even get through that first door. So to parents who are, would like to consider adoption, but not sure about the financial reasons, what do you say to them?
I totally understand that feeling because I was there for so many years. I felt so called to adopt, but I didn't understand how I could possibly make it happen with, you know, the income that I was making and just that huge number of the cost. And what I would say to you is just take some steps forward. Try it. I really think doors will open. There are so many opportunities for grants and for people who just want to be generous and who believe in what you're doing and who maybe, you know, also feel called to support adoptions. Maybe they can't do it themselves, but a lot of people, they want to come beside you and help, and you will just be surprised. But it's such a blessing to watch all of that happen. You know, to have those moments where we had someone from our church that, you know, handed us a $3,000 check one day because they felt led to do that. I mean, just to be a part of that and to watch that happen and see how God makes it happen is such a blessing. There, honestly, like that ended up being the easiest part of all of this. That's the ironic thing. It's the thing that stopped me for so many years, but it ended up being the easiest part and the most beautiful to watch unfold. The waiting, way harder. Waiting was way harder than the money part. But that's just something you have to do. And through the waiting, your heart will be prepared. You'll gain wisdom. Hopefully, you'll end the process a different person than when you started it. That was my prayer through this whole thing. Like, God, please make this worth something. You know, like, help me be more like you, Jesus, at the end than I was at the beginning. And that's all we can hope for, you know, and just taking one step at a time, because it's easy to get overwhelmed. And if you can just take one step at a time, celebrate those victories as you go, and just know that in the end, it's all going to be worth it.
That's really good. And you're right, it is. And a lot of sometimes you do have those major fees due right away, but a lot of times it's split up. It's 2,000 here, 2,000 a couple months later. So I think that helps too, knowing that I don't just sign up and then somebody's knocking at my door asking for $30,000. But
That is a very good point.
it can be split up. And somebody told us that when we first started was you'll be shocked by the people that want to support you. And we were, and you're right, it's so beautiful and it's a way to feel so supported in this because you realize not just that people are giving you money, but that people love you and care about you. And this is bigger than you. It's about a child getting a home. It's not just a dream that you have, but it's bigger than that. And it's amazing the, like you said, we would have people who we weren't even that close with, but would say years ago we wanted to adopt and we didn't do it. And now we want to give through you to see an adoption happen. And you know, stuff like that, that you're shocked by how many people adoption touches one way or another.
And they want to be part of your story and your child's story. And when they know that they like helped get your child here, they feel so invested. And that means a lot.
Okay, well, thank you so much for sharing your resources, your ideas, your creativity, as far as fundraising, and just your inspiration, that people can do this. This is possible. But just to wrap things up, tell us a little bit about what it's been like since you've had your family all home together.
Yes, it has been just amazing. It really has. And Faniella, she's 4 years old. She came here knowing very little English. And I'd say here we are just over 6 months later and she's fluent. she can speak anything. She's got her emotional language now. The language was probably, you know, one of the bigger struggles for us because especially the emotional language, she just didn't have a way to tell us how she was feeling. And so we've worked through that. She and her brother have an incredible bond. They are so different. I mean, night and day different, but they click so well and they play together so well. And this quarantine, I think, has really just helped their relationship flourish even more. And they have such a strong connection. And it's kind of funny because quarantine life is what my daughter lived her whole life, essentially, you know, like this is what she's used to. She's not used to going out and going to all these, you know, restaurants or crowded place like that. Yeah. Her world was very small. And so she's been very comfortable with this. Mm-hmm. She does miss school a lot. So we got home in November and every day she'd say, "Fanny, school, Fanny, school." And it was like, "No, sweetheart, you can't start school yet." And it killed me because she wanted to so bad. But, you know, they tell you to cocoon and everything and form those bonds. And so finally in January, after Christmas break, we started her in like a morning preschool and she loved it. Mm-hmm. But she only got to do it for about 2 months.
Oh.
So the other day I asked my kids, "So would you rather go back to school or do you like homeschooling with mommy as your teacher?" And my son was like, "I like homeschooling with mommy." And Fanny's like, "I want to go back to school."
Hey, there's honesty, you know?
I know. I don't blame her. I really don't. And I kind of want them to go back to school. So hopefully life will get a little back to normal in the fall.
Yeah. True.
We are planning a summer road trip out west to see family. So we're going to show her a little bit of America this summer, and we cannot wait to make those memories. And we're going to go to some national parks as long as they're open and just see some sights. And I can't wait to make those memories as a family.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. Well, congratulations on doing it all and being home. And yeah. Where can people find you?
Yeah. So mostly on Instagram at Allie Storm. That's AliStorm, or at Chick-fil-A Podcast. you can also go to ChickfilAPodcast.com. That's where I'm blogging the most lately for all things Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. And you guys have really cute Chick-fil-A merchandise stuff too. So check that out.
Yeah, our little fan shop.
Love it. Well, thank you so much, Allison. It's been great to talk to you and hear from you. Thanks for so much for being on the show.
This has been so fun. Thank you for having me.